Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, that area of land called Israel, or sometimes referred to as the Promised Land, why did God, according to the Bible, select that piece of land when it's been the source of so much turmoil, century after century? Well, my friend, that is an excellent question, and we will spend some significant time talking about Israel this week, but we also need to catch up on the news in general. While Fox News was covering the horrific terrorist suicide bombing in Manchester, England, the other news networks were spending 99% of their time discussing, you guessed it, Trump and Russia. Okay, since the whole Trump-Russia collaboration to steal the election is a speculation somewhat void of facts, let me offer at least one fact that you can be sure of. I voted for Trump. It had nothing to do with anything Russian. It had everything to do with the fact that Hillary Clinton was an abysmal candidate who would have been a nightmarish president. This fact, incidentally, is not from an anonymous source. The source is me. But back to Hillary Clinton. It seems she just won't go away. Hillary gave a commencement speech at her alma mater, reminiscing her days in college when she protested a different president who eventually was impeached in disgrace. She was talking about Nixon. Our would-be president seems unaware that Nixon was never impeached, but instead resigned. The last president to be impeached, Mrs. Clinton, was your husband, Bill. And in this same speech, she was on a roll about how Trump never has anything to do with facts or truth. It was an ironic moment of misspeaking, even if we were to put aside her many scandals, the many lies she's been caught in, and the audacious disgust of this pathological liar lecturing the rest of us about truth. But why hold Hillary accountable when instead we can just keep making up things about Trump? Have you heard the latest? Oh, you'll love this one. Somehow it's Trump's fault that a GOP candidate for Congress in Montana attacked a reporter. It's Trump's fault. Apparently, Trump's rhetoric fostered a violent atmosphere. Oh, yeah? Well, then who is responsible for the violence on campuses such as Berkeley? Can that be ascribed to the rhetoric of Democrat politicians? Nah. That would call Dems to consistency, and Dems never have to be consistent. Either that or they might be forced to consider the radical idea that violent people are actually responsible for their own actions. Meanwhile, as the elitist snowflakes who complained ahead of time that Trump might not accept the election results continue in their crusade to not accept the election results, Donald Trump is making real news, including a trip to the Middle East, a trip to Europe, a trip to the Vatican. Now, how do I feel about his speech in Saudi Arabia? Well, compared to Obama's magical mystery apology tour, it was like hearing from Winston Churchill. As for his trip to Israel, he made history as the first sitting American president to pray at the Western Wall. But the real news in Israel is President Trump's intention to broker, in his own words, the ultimate deal. He's going to make the ultimate deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Now, look, certainly Trump could never have become a successful businessman had he not learned how to make fantastic deals. And he may even be, as he claims, the greatest deal maker in history. But if he believes he's going to bring about a peaceful solution to the Middle East situation, he's in for a rude awakening. Oh, don't get me wrong. It's possible that a deal can be struck. It's possible that a deal can even be signed. This has happened before, but the deal will not be kept by the Palestinians. Let me say that again. The deal will not be kept by the Palestinians. Why not? Because they do not recognize Israel's right to exist. Period. They are not interested in a two-state solution. They are interested in what Hitler called the final solution. You can't make deals with people who want you dead. This is something our well-intentioned president does not seem to understand. And he's not alone. I actually just finished a new book about Israel. It will be out in a couple of weeks. It's called The Holocaust Against Israel. Needless to say, this will be a very controversial book, the most disturbing and certainly most difficult book I have ever written. I enjoy working on my fantasy novel series so much more, but this is important. I did feel it was something God wanted me to do. You've heard me talk about Israel a lot on this show. I've written a lot of articles about it. I'm incorporating a lot of that. But in this vein, as a companion piece to the book with this organized material, I am going to do a series about Israel over the air these next few weeks. Almost an audio version of the book, not quite that, but almost. I guess you could also call it a shameless plug for the book, but believe me, I am doing myself no favors plugging this book. The book will garner so much criticism from Muslim apologists and the politically correct. I could easily get slandered all over the internet, and I have friends who warned me it could put my life in danger, but what can I say? While it does not feel good to be criticized or to take risks, it feels even worse when I listen to lies or the words of sincerely brainwashed people. Years ago, the prophet Isaiah said this, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Now, we've all taken tests and quizzes in school. The true-false test was my favorite because it meant that even if I hadn't studied, which was often, I still had a 50-50 chance. Yes, indeed, those little true-false things saved my rebellious neck. To a lesser degree, I also enjoyed multiple choice because even though the odds were not quite as good as true-false, I at least had a 1 in 5 chance. As for fill in the blank, let's not go there. I also made an interesting observation about true-false tests. I discovered that most answers, for some strange reason, known only to teachers who prepared the tests, were usually true, even when they were written in a tricky way that suggested false. Well, think of our discussion these next few weeks as one great big true-false test about the Middle East. Its purpose? To challenge the conventional wisdom and naive beliefs of the day, and to correct the horrible historical revision being disseminated from commentators in the news media, to certain professors on college campuses, to the clever comments that come out of your friends' mouths at cocktail parties or around a water cooler at work. However, today's true-false experience will break from tradition. Since I am correcting presumed established facts, allow me to offer you a somewhat obvious little clue. This time, you may want to seriously consider the option of false, even if the statement seems true. It has often been observed that the nation of Israel is a piece of real estate no bigger than the state of New Jersey. On a globe, Israel looks practically microscopic compared to so many nations of the world. And yet, for some reason, Israel's actions concern not only her immediate neighbors, but many other countries far removed from the Middle East. Yes, modern Israel has captured the attention of nations everywhere, from France to China to Brazil to India to Australia to New Zealand. This tiny area, a democracy in the midst of a turbulent, iron-fisted Middle East, is in very close proximity to much bigger nations, many of whom seek her complete annihilation. But one would never know this when listening to modern, politically correct talking points. Instead, we come away thinking of Israel as an occupier and a ruthless empire, ambitious as ancient Rome itself. Israel's frequently called everything from an apartheid state to a military bully to a murderer guilty of attempted genocide. And there was a time when such propaganda was easily dismissed as a downright lie. Unfortunately, modern trends cause facts to become twisted and reissue. Authentic history is in short supply these days. In all fairness, many who repeat the lies are not themselves guilty of lying. They are merely repeating what they so often hear. They are sincerely deceived, or as I suggested a moment ago, downright brainwashed. While interest in Middle East turbulence certainly existed long before Al-Qaeda's infamous 9/11 terror campaign, the attack on America's World Trade Center and Pentagon building has ironically given new life to a whole different kind of discussion. Instead of placing the blame squarely with the murderers and their passionate beliefs, it is commonly taught that Israel's so-called illegal occupation of Palestinian territory accounts for much of the recruitment amongst Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hezbollah, Hamas, and many others. All these other self-proclaimed Islamist terror organizations. Many would deny that justification for war against the United States and other non-Muslim countries has anything to do with a religious motivation to extend jihadist power or Sharia law. Instead, Israel is now being viewed as the primary culprit. America is not far behind. Yes, the United States' own interest in Middle East affairs and her alignment with Israel is proclaimed as a secondary source of tension. Back in 2001, on the heels of the vicious 9/11 attack, New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani refused a check of $10 million offered for the purpose of disaster relief by the Saudi prince, who, along with his generosity, offered a patronizing, sanctimonious comment about how the United States should, quote-unquote, re-examine its policies in the Middle East and adopt a more balanced stand toward the Palestinian cause. Now, to Mayor Giuliani's credit, he responded with refreshing clarity. He said, "I entirely reject that statement. There is no moral equivalent for this act. There is no justification for it. To suggest that there's a justification only invites this happening in the future. It is highly irresponsible and very, very dangerous." Unfortunately, the connection between Israeli so-called occupation and inspiration for terrorist reaction is an idea that continues to rear its head. Not only amongst political actors of world theater, but in the ivory towers of academia as well. Speaking as a guest lecturer at Chapman University in 2002, Edwards said, a Palestinian-American Columbia University professor of English and comparative literature, phrased it this way. He said, U.S. criticism is muted over Israel's barbaric treatment of the Palestinians. Even though U.S. foreign policy is accountable to its citizens, it is easier to criticize the Arabs as the villains than to admit the actions that have generated this intense hatred. Ladies and gentlemen, many such quotations can be found from American college professors. Since these comments do not exist in a vacuum, our true-false test, while certainly relevant in a post-9/11 world, will seek a more foundational task, the re-examine of some key historical landmarks which created present-day Middle East climate and opinion. They need to be re-examinated because history repeats itself. Just imagine if you could take a trip back through time to Germany in the 1930s. What would you say to people? How would you attempt to warn them of what was about to happen? Would you tell them that familiar anti-Semitism would soon give rise to the goal of genocide? Would you warn them that Hitler and his cohorts planned the complete extermination of Jews from the face of the earth, including women, children, and infants? And if you shared this warning, would anybody believe you? Probably not. In all likelihood, you would be labeled as paranoid or extremist. Why? Because what the Nazis were about to do was unthinkable. It also smacked in the face of modern ideas, even more pronounced today, but already around back then, that human beings were morally evolving, or that there was really no such thing as evil. Well, right now, I feel that I have gone back through time, in a manner of speaking, to warn you. No, I didn't hitch a ride with Doc Brown and Marty McFly on their DeLorean time machine, but I do see the beginnings of a new Holocaust on the horizon because history repeats itself. Now, before we begin, I may as well mention this before somebody else does. Some of the sources for the facts you're about to hear were written by Jews, and I myself am a Jew. There. I said it. Everybody breathe. Perhaps this fact warrants an important disclaimer. It is interesting how Jewish documentation by some is automatically considered a tainted source, While the words of anti-Semites or sincere Gentiles who grew up hearing myths about the Jews are often granted the automatic presumption of objectivity. How often do we hear that the Holocaust never happened? Quite often. And we'll talk about that more when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. We're talking about Holocaust deniers because there were a lot of people that denied the first Holocaust, and the second one that seems to be upon us is also in denial. Holocaust deniers, while attempting to expose the myth of the Holocaust, love to point out that most books written about the Holocaust were written by Jews. This should not surprise us. Who will be more concerned about Hitler's Holocaust than the Jews? Who will want to warn us about the possibility of another Holocaust more than the Jews? Not that Jews have been the only reporters of this dark time in history. This well-established historical information comes from multitudes of sources. As a matter of fact, one of the definitive nonfiction pieces about the Nazis called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich was written by a Gentile. And dare we mention the actual films of concentration camps? How about German government-level documents? The Nazis had an odd eccentricity. They carefully documented just exactly what they planned to do. Finally, the Nuremberg trials conducted by the Allied forces upon the settling dust of Germany's defeat provided the world with a generous and detailed record of actual Nazi confessions. Unfortunately, these other sources are often ignored or reinterpreted. And while you listen to suggestions about Jewish propaganda being the only source for the so-called Holocaust, please keep in mind that the phrase Jewish propaganda was already used by the Nazis once upon a time to turn the Germans against the Jews in the first place. Jews redeemed propagandists and conspirators. On one hand, the Jews were a secret federation of greedy capitalists who wanted to take over the world. On the other hand, for those with opposite concerns, the Jews were a conspiracy of communists who wanted to take over the world. You see, those who believe in conspiracies never need to worry about contradicting themselves and never need to make a whole lot of sense. Neither do they feel compelled to back up their claims with documentation. After all, if the facts were that obvious, it wouldn't be much of a secret conspiracy, right? Antisemitism is often viewed as a mystery. One of the few emotions shared by extreme right and extreme leftist fanatics is a hatred of Jews. While the Bible does offer a spiritual explanation, identifying this unique source of racism as demonic intrusion into our world, authentication for the Bible's accuracy and its sobering teachings about spiritual warfare will have to wait for a different radio program. As a matter of fact, I've already done many such radio shows. You know that if you followed me over the years. But our purpose tonight is to supply information that can be readily examined by anyone interested in world affairs, religious and non-religious alike. And so, yes, I used Jewish sources, and yes, I am Jewish. I may be accused of bias. I suppose there is some bias. We all have a little. I was raised Jewish, and I would be lying if I didn't confess the obvious that there is much emotion associated with what I'm speaking about tonight. On the other hand, even though I was born into a Jewish home, I converted to Christianity during my second year of college. Now, I won't go into the details right now. My testimony is easy to find. I have shared my story on the radio, on television, on my website, around the entire country, at both churches and college campuses. The unique dynamics associated with my conversion are very important to me personally, but they have little to do with this present discourse. I'm mentioning the subject briefly right now for only one reason. As a Jewish Christian, I have, needless to say, often found myself at odds with fellow Jews. Theologically, I've been very critical of Judaism, especially regarding the obvious subject of Jesus. To identify Jesus as the Messiah of Israel is to disagree with present-day Judaism on a core fundamental level. My point right now? I have been willing to criticize Jews. And whether listeners consider my criticism to be valid or invalid, it does demonstrate a significant degree of objectivity. Please know that this radio talk show host certainly is not one who defends all Jewish beliefs, right or wrong. The situation is different with the nation of Israel. Here I am on the side of the Zionists, those who believe the Jews are entitled to a national homeland, and who also believe Israel is and always has been their national homeland. My brother is an Orthodox Jew. He and I get into frequent, spirited debates about Jesus, but we are on the same page when the subject changes to Israel itself. And yet, even here, I am in disagreement with many other Jews, specifically liberals. Liberal Jews in America and liberal Jews in Israel, interestingly enough, tend to take the side of the Palestinians. Jews have often been their own worst enemy. Later on, I will talk more about this unusual national allegory to battered wife syndrome, where victims blame themselves and excuse their perpetrators. One more introductory disclaimer. This one has to do with the relationship between Jews and evangelical Christians. A number of years ago, I was an invited guest speaker at a seminary. The subject was not Judaism, but rather a defense for the historical accuracy of the Bible, Old and New Testament. Generally, such talks are followed by long Q&A times. One of the seminarians raised his hand with an interesting question. I will tell you what his question was when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Thank you. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Giving a lecture at a seminary a number of years ago. Afterwards, during an open Q&A, one seminarian raised his hand. Now, he had taken many classes about what Christians call the end times. That's a popular term for the fulfillment of Bible prophecy and the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, although there's a wide range of viewpoint amongst theologians, several of the popular teachings associate Jesus' return with the nation of Israel. They insist that the Jewish restoration of the Promised Land in the 20th century is a fulfillment of ancient scriptural predictions, such as Isaiah chapter 11. And they believe a future battle called the Battle of Armageddon will climax in Christ's rescuing of Israel from her enemies and ruling as king of the world with Israel as his headquarters. Anyway, let me share the seminarian's question. He said, as a Christian, I feel obligated to take Israel's side because of Bible prophecy. But when I follow the news, I become concerned about Israeli abuses toward the persecuted Palestinians. What should I do about this? Well, I appreciated the question and I offered a careful response. I said, I believe in Bible prophecy, but I do not believe prophecy should be the only reason for Christians to side with Israel. Let me offer you a better reason, a human rights reason. If we could correct the historical revision going on today, you would find yourself siding with Israel regardless of Bible prophecy. And you're thinking, okay, Bob, you've made your disclaimers. We've listened to your introduction. Just give us this true-false test about the Jews and Palestinians already. Fair enough. The test begins right now. True or false? Whenever there is a conflict going on, we should immediately assume that both sides are partially right and partially wrong. There is no other explanation for conflicts. They are a matter of perspective. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. If people aren't getting along, or if nations aren't getting along, there are always two sides to the story. Answer, false. But it sure sounds good, doesn't it? Yes, this statement upon first glance rings true, not only true, but noble, intellectual, fashionable, and nuanced. A supposition seldom questioned. A diplomat's template that has been drummed into our heads since we were little. Now, certainly the statement is true at times. The problem here is with absolute words such as whenever or immediately assume. Peaceful societies tend to think that everyone else in the world looks at life exactly as they do, wanting more or less the same qualities of life, especially the desire to live in tranquility. Thus, the need for more talk and better understanding. Like a mantra, we hear the preferred words of peace bellowing down every corridor of our culture, from institutions of higher learning to our favorite movies and television shows. Naturally, there are always two sides of the story. We learned as much on Star Trek. How many times has Captain Kirk arbitrated between two planets or two factions on one planet? If not Kirk, it was one of his many spin-off counterparts, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Archer, spanning American generations from baby boomer to Gen X to millennial. I can just hear that famous beloved voice of actor William Shatner right now. If you could each just listen to one another. Yes, indeed. Listening with empathy is certainly ideal, but it begs a rather obvious question. Supposing one side doesn't wish to listen. What if one side simply wants the other dead? Now, let's all think for a moment. Isn't it possible, just remotely possible, that on some occasions one side is completely in the wrong? Before you answer in haste, I must point out that with other conversations, you yourself have been quite willing to use labels such as right and wrong. This is a concept we all embrace. It's just that we tend to select our issues differently when dealing with faulty information. Starting at the level of family, I can safely assume uniform agreement. Are there two sides to the story when a husband beats his wife and the crime is established factually? As a society, we quickly and properly condemn the man. We admonish the wife to take a stand, secure a restraining order, and press charges. We exhort her to stop enabling the abuse. Indeed, by enabling the abuse, she often puts her own children in harm's way. Unfortunately, the role of the enabler is not limited to family members. Whole nations can enable other nations, but nations also have a conscience, and sometimes this conscience can be stirred. In the days of slavery, when abolitionists debated slave owners or debated anyone advocating that despicable institution, would it have been appropriate to say that both viewpoints were equally valid simply because two strong opinions existed? Supposing somebody wanted to defend rape? Supposing somebody wanted to defend racism? In ancient Rome, should the passions advocating gladiatorial combat have been deemed equally moral to the condemnation of the practice? Many Roman writers denounced the gladiator games. Were they being too judgmental? Were they articulating nothing more than a mere opinion, no more valid or invalid than anyone else's? Were the Nazis justified in their ideologies and practices? Were there two sides to the story, the side of the Allies and the side of the Axis? When Hitler signed treaties with Chamberlain, he did so with the intention of breaking them. No other course of action even once crossed his mind. He was going to conquer the world for the Aryan race, get rid of the Jews, get rid of the homosexuals, sterilize, and in many cases murder the mentally challenged. Shall I go on? Yes, sometimes there are two sides of the story, and sometimes there's only one side. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker, Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. continue our series on Israel, but right now my guest tonight is Dr. Gheorghe Gunev, a Bulgarian-born scholar who's been on our show before. He got his PhD from the Institute of International Relations, Moscow, Russia. He is an author and lecturer on the issues of radical Islam and the foreign policy of the United States and Russia. Dr. Gunev's book is entitled The Dark Side of the Crescent Moon, The Impact of Radical Islam on American-Russian Relations. Dr. Gunev, welcome back to our program.
Thank you so much, sir.
Now, it's interesting because it's been a number of years since I've had you, but a lot has happened in the world since then. And obviously, Islam is still in the news, and Russia's in the news quite a bit lately, too, with all the alleged ties with Trump. So we wanted to have you back and get your take on some of the things that are on your radar right now.
Okay, one of the most important developments, you know, that as a rule are missing from the area of the public understanding is the fact that Russia and America are facing the same enemy in the face of radical Islam. Even the Russian situation is much tougher, much more serious, because unlike the United States, in Russia there is an armed struggle, virtual fighting between the Russian army and security detachments and the detachments of radical Islamists in the mountains of in the area of the Caucasian mountains. Given the percentage of the Muslim population in Russia, the number is substantially higher than the number of Muslims in the United States. The same problem, of course, does exist, you know, in connection with the fact that the large majority among those Muslims are just, so to speak, normal people, you know. But in both countries, in the United States and in Russia, there is a violent minority, not to speak about Europe, of course, ready to any kind of crime.
What is your take on the way things are being handled right now by America, Russia, and Europe?
Okay, if we shortly touch this remarkable trip of President Trump, you know, there is one disturbing moment, you know, in this entire situation, regardless of the triumph of the involving the reception, involving the deals reached in Saudi Arabia and with the government of Saudi Arabia. The disturbing moment is that obviously the president doesn't want to address the issue, the Islamic issue in the world, in its entire complexity, because his obvious purpose was to please Saudi Arabia and Israel, and consequently to blame the main enemy of both states, which is Iran, of course. And this strategy relatively coincides with the American national interests, but not fully, because the problem is that, roughly speaking, almost three-quarters of the deeply hostile terrorist acts have been committed on the Sunni side of the Sunni-Shia divide, you know. In other words, billions of dollars are spent by the so-called religious foundations of Saudi Arabia in order to organize the so-called jihad. If you take a short look at the event at this bloody civil war in Syria, the main culprits were the governments of Turkey, and primarily the responsibility of President Erdogan, who is a hardcore Islamist. when Turkey was turning a blind eye to the fact that thousands of volunteers from all over the world were coming to Turkey, were crossing totally free, totally unaffected, you know, by any action, were crossing the Turkish-Syrian border in order to join the detachments of the jihadists. Equally responsible in this crime was the former president of the United States, Barack Obama, who knew very well that this war effort that was helping, due to this Saudi Turkish American support, the actions directed against the government of Syria, which is, of course, not spotless, to say the least, but nevertheless, it always has been a secular structure, not an Islamic one. And so this fact was never cleared, within the frames of the political discussions in this country, and consequently, it never affected the decision-making process in the area of this entire complexity.
It seems that a lot of people view the way President Trump is dealing with Islamic terrorism as being just 100% better from Obama, but you're still feeling that he's falling short a little bit and that this came out in his trip to Saudi Arabia and Israel. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yes. Now, I'm not trying to simplify the extremely complex problem like the problem of the American-Saudi relations. Because recently, I was in the course of my research on the book I'm writing right now, I wasn't able to find what is the size, the precise size of the Saudi investment on American soil. And I found a little bit outdated data, suggesting that the size of this investment reached almost, I'm positive that right now as we speak, it has exceeded it, the level of $500 billion. In other words, I'm talking about 500 million, to be more precise, 478 billion with D, billion dollars investment in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. And nevertheless, if you walk down the American streets, you will never see some establishment with a sign Saudi-owned, But at the same time, this is so important for the American economy. Unfortunately, I realize we don't have the entire amount of time needed to clarify all those issues. But let me give you one other very important aspect. For instance, Saudi Arabia has been, the government of Saudi Arabia has been lured on several occasions to transform, to move its assets from American soil somewhere in Western Europe,
Okay, would you hang with me over the break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Christmas may be over, but reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy! The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with Dr. Gorgia Gunev, a scholar who has his PhD on international relations. Dr. Gunev, before we went to the break, it sounded like you were saying that one of the, if I was understanding you correctly, one of the flaws in making deals with the Saudis is so much of what they own here in America, and that perhaps our different presidents over the years have been beholden to them.
No, objectively, there is such a powerful contradiction which no American administration was capable of overcoming, you know. What I'm talking about is the contradiction between the extremely useful for the United States role of Saudi Arabia as the oil supplier in the past, you know, in the present and so on and so forth. And also, Saudi Arabia is a great spender. They are buying a huge amount of American weaponry. In other words, they are helping in any way American economy.
Right.
You know?
So that would make us somewhat beholden to them then, wouldn't it?
To a certain degree, yes. But on the other hand, because the Wahhabism, the most dangerous wing of the Islamic faith, you know. Wahhabism is the official religion of Saudi Arabia. And consequently, the government is supplying with out of this limitless amount of oil-related dollars, you know, flowing into the country, is supplying the so-called religious foundations. And those foundations are creating all structures, almost all structures, necessary for the preparation of the next generation of jihadists. So I'm not saying any way, I'm not diminishing the great, great service President Trump has done to his country, you know, by eliminating every trace of this extremely dangerous course followed by the previous administration. I'm fully recognizing the credit that president has so richly deserved, you know. But at the same time, all I'm trying to do is just to give you some idea about the complexity of the issue. How, for instance, we could benefit from tremendous financial wealth, you know, connections and so on of Saudi Arabian government, and at the same time to change to counter the negative impact of all those activities of the above-mentioned, you know, before-mentioned religious foundations.
Yeah, it certainly has been a contradiction. I know that most of the terrorists associated with 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. So was bin Laden. I know George Bush, who was pretty hawkish in that war, still got bin Laden's family out of there ahead of time. Although the government of Saudi Arabia would claim to be against terrorism and has helped in the effort against terrorism, they're definitely a very strict Muslim-run government where women have virtually no rights, churches are against the law. So there are a lot of contradictions. We do sometimes make strange bedfellows when we're trying to unite for a common cause.
Without any doubt, you're absolutely right on this part.
Now, you felt that there was a mistake in what Trump did with Israel as well. What was that one?
To a certain degree, yes, because there is a contradiction in President Trump's approach to the problem. On the one hand, he's saying that his local purpose, so to speak, in Israel is to assure the peace between Israelis and Palestinians. And at the same time, he declared on many occasions a all-out support, American all-out support to Israel, which this fact encourages Netanyahu and the ruling coalition and the people around them, political parties around them, just to go ahead with their agenda. For instance, what they're doing right now, let's say a substantial part of those territories of the occupied lands, this is the United Nations term, or disputed lands, if I'm using the Israeli official
term.
I would use
disputed rather than occupied. And it is a contradiction to claim he's going to make a deal, but on the other hand, talk like he's taking Israel's side. I'd rather he stop talking about making a deal. I don't know if you heard any of the first part of the program, but the Palestinians will not even recognize Israel's right to exist. Now, when President Bush, after 9/11, said that our war is against terrorists and any country that harbors a terrorist, it seems like we at times as Americans have been forcing Israel to make deals with terrorists that we ourselves claim that we're not willing to make.
Correct. I agree with his assessment, and also I totally agree with the concept that without a clear-cut Palestinian recognition of the right of Israel to exist and of its territorial integrity and so on, it's not possible to have a peace in the Middle East. I totally agree with that, because it's beyond any doubt, this is the truth, you know.
Yeah, especially when Mahmoud Abbas is a Holocaust denier and publicly says he'll reward terrorists. We're out of time, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. We hope you'll join us again sometime.
Thank you so much indeed. Thank you. I was so pleased to have the option to share my thoughts with your wonderful audience. Thank you.
We're always honored to have you. We'll continue our series on Israel next week.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.